So welcome to this podcast. In times such as these, investing in learning development may seem an odd thing to discuss. Yet organisations and individuals who succeed will be those that are skilled in the right ways. We hear a lot about the need to continuously learn, and indeed we've discussed it in several of the reports that ACCA has published, Learning for the Future, The Digital Accountant, and also in our work with Oxford Business School. So it might seem a challenge for us in this pressurised world. How can we be successful? How can we continuously learn in turbulent times? My name is Clive Webb, and I'm a Senior Insights Manager at ACCA, and I'm pleased today to be joined by two guests. The first, Dr. Nigel Spencer of Oxford Side Business School. Nigel is a Leadership Development Specialist and Advisor on Talent Development based at the Business School. He's created several award-winning programs over the past 15 years for global professional services firms, focusing on how coaching can be embedded into leadership programs to create behavioral change. My second guest is Keith Jones. Keith is a business psychologist and executive partner at Alchemy Worldwide, with considerable experience of delivering programs in the professional services arena. He's also the co-author of Provoke, The Art of Transformational Facilitation, which is an award-winning business book from 2019. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So Nigel, if I can start with you first. We hear a lot about the phrase continuous learning. We read a lot about it, and people like you and me and Keith write a lot about it. What does it actually mean in reality?
Thank you, Clive. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. I mean, I think for me, just to kick off with a few bullet points that probably we'll explore in more detail with Keith in a minute. But four things. I think for me, what is continuous learning? I think it's a mindset. So there's something for me about what are you noticing, and having that mindset of actually trying to notice things and being curious about things as well. So for me, that's very important. I think the second one would be about it's looking outside and keeping your horizons very broad, probably, Clive, especially at this time, I think. So, you know, I think it's easy in these times when organizations are under stress to, you know, get dragged back internally into an internal world. So stay external would be one thought, to really maximize the learning opportunity. Thirdly, I think being open-minded and seeking out different experiences. And at the moment, I think we've all got plenty of experiences we can explore. And lastly, being open to feedback, I think, as well, which links to that, perhaps, about having the courage to take some risks. So that's just four areas off the top of my head, Clive, that perhaps we can explore a bit more.
And Keith, that resonance of mindset, I think, plays to a lot of the work you and I have done over the years together. Sure. About really what continuous learning means.
Yes. I mean, it certainly has. And I think that the issue of mindset is, in some cases, is very in vogue at the moment. But I think that the other part with mindset is that there are various types of skills that are necessary in order to develop what would arguably be called a positive mindset. And I guess it's in some ways, it's a very useful question to say what type of mindset is necessary to create continuous learning as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, within that context, there are so many avenues that we can go down just in the issue of mindset.
But Keith, a lot of us would say, actually, those organizations, those individuals that are going to succeed at a time like this, are those that do take the time to invest in our skills. Why is it that it's important now, and why is it something that we do need to navigate to make a success of it?
It's a really interesting question, and I'll tell you the reason why is because one of the things that I found, certainly in this very short period of lockdown and the change in our industry, there are a number of things that have come to the fore. The first thing is the importance of reflection. Now, the reason I say that is because for many of the people that I've certainly worked with, there is a particular orthodoxy in the way that they have followed their learning experiences through their professional career. The opportunity for reflection, discovery, and meaning making activates certain parts of the way in which we learn that don't usually get as much airtime as some of the other areas. So I think it's a phenomenal opportunity to do that. And it's a phenomenal opportunity, particularly with those groupings who are much younger in age and who wouldn't have had the benefit of a reflective education.
Keith, I think that's a really interesting point because, you know, it was interesting, as you say, at whatever stage of the career path you're at, whether it's the juniors or the senior folk, I've really noticed over the last few months, you know, we ran one program recently and what did one leader in a very informal kind of coffee conversation pass on to me at the end? They said, do you know what I've really taken away? I need to do some more. And what I do now for 5 minutes every Friday afternoon is some journaling. Yeah. And this whole thought of reflection around what have I tried? What have I actually tried as a leader to actually think about how, say, how I run team meetings differently or how I engage, how I let go. So that whole, and also how do I learn myself? You know, what have I noticed this week of when I tried something as a leader from some of my, in my leadership practice, what did I learn by trying that?
Well, that's absolutely right. And journaling is one of the things that I certainly like to come to later on. But it's the, what's interesting about it is that the process of reflection and creating meaning from that reflection opens up different layers of inquiry, curiosity, and learning that would never normally never normally see the light of day.
In this sort of world of sort of sitting here in this lockdown, in this isolation, a lot of the reflection we always talk about happens from social interaction. And that's probably what we're less able to do at the moment. How do we land that learning? How do we make it actually of value to us in a scenario where we need to learn, we need to develop new skills very quickly, but equally we don't have social interaction to support us?
I mean, I think for me, Clive, one part to that question is how we define what a learning experience might be. Because as you say, in this current situation, we're all in you know, lockdown in certain physical situation, often at our own homes, our own places where we live or our own neighborhoods, you know. So where can I learn from? And I think it's probably keeping one point from me would be keep broad how you define what a learning experience might be, because it might seem a bit, some things might seem a bit left field to you at the moment, but actually how much what can I take from that that might actually be relevant to my day-to-day work? The normal won't be normal after this anyway. We will go back to a slightly different way of operating. And I suppose the other point, and then, you know, Keith, I'm sure will have thoughts as well, is, you know, people often talk, there was a really interesting article the other day talking about, don't forget there's the two types of learning. There's almost the cognitive learning, but there's the emotional social learning. And probably in environments we're all in at the moment, there's still an opportunity, I would say, for both of those if we explored it and were creative.
I think that it's absolutely right. And there's a point, Nigel, that you made right at the very beginning of this, which is about curiosity and keeping things broad. There's an enormous opportunity that is available to people via the mediums such as YouTube. So, you know, at a very tangible, practical level, if I think about individuals that really want to explore how they show up in a professional arena, or the process of influencing or persuading, or teams that are great or teams that aren't great, you know, those kind of building blocks of exec ed, there are masses of opportunities to be curious about what people see through YouTube, and more so than they would normally get the opportunity to do so. And it would be that coupled with the reflection and the meaning making that would add some real interest to this. The other part, which is the part about the social connection, if we think about this from a social anthropological perspective, we are creatures of connection.
Yes.
And we are creatures of contact. And one of the things, absolutely bizarrely as it was, just before we came on this podcast, I was looking, looking at a report on YouTube that came on the Spanish flu, the large pandemic of 1918. And one of the things that in Phoenix, in Arizona, when it hit there, the mayor of the city was talking about a hunger in the city that had been decimated by this. But it was a hunger related to connection, physical physical human connection. And I think even in this period of social distancing, that I've certainly experienced and certainly heard other people echo.
Yeah, no, completely.
So does that need for social interaction in this phrase of hunger, and I really like that one, Keith, that makes sense in terms of actually my learning experience is how I know I need to develop comes out from partly a thirst for knowledge, which we can actually possibly more see in the world we're in at the moment, but then turning that into something that I can practically apply. Bearing in mind, a lot of what we need to do is fast moving, agile, quick yes. steps, collaborative, etc.
It's an interesting point, because it does come back to one of the other points that Nigel raised about the different types of learning. And I think that in some respects, particularly in corporate life, because of the orthodoxy of the way a lot of learning has been done, not all of it, but a lot of learning has been done, is people have either been consciously or unconsciously orientated to saying, well, that experience, that representation of that experience is learning, and everything else doesn't fit it. So the expansive landscape of what constitutes the opportunity for learning has unquestionably changed. And that's where the other mediums come in. Nigel?
No, I think that's right. I mean, that's, you know, it just, and it, that takes me to the thought, Keith, of experimentation as well. I mean, and, you know, I think, again, risk-averse professionals, as they're sometimes portrayed, you know, if there's a mindset there of actually I want everything to be perfect, you know, that feeling of, oh, how will it come across if I don't do something really 100% well? Yeah. I think we're in, my thought would be to everyone, you know, we're in an environment now where actually there's real permission to take risks. And, you know, if I was to go back to Belbin and his lovely phrase of for leaders, what might be an allowable weakness? I would say absolutely an allowable weakness at the moment is to experiment and take risks.
Yeah.
And so I would really encourage everyone, as you know, as a, you know, take this opportunity to, you know, to take a few risks and to learn by doing.
So I guess that takes me nicely to have some practical suggestions for people to make sure they keep learning through this turbulent time, to make sure they keep gaining the skills that they need to gain.
Well, just to kick off with a quick thought, that something prompted by Keith's thought earlier, is that I think, and I'll go back to mindset again, that we've both been talking about, Clive. I think one thing is that don't forget that things were also disrupted before this, especially in professional services. So in some ways, things you could say have, of course, they've changed massively the last few weeks. But in a way, you know, we were talking about disruption in the sector. We were talking about changing skill sets. We were talking about people needing to have mindsets of learning and ongoing learning, because it was all about adapting yourself so that you would be able to service your clients and work with their new types of worlds that were evolving in different ways for different pressures that had happened way before this. So again, I would go back to that mindset of don't forget we were all having to adapt, and that thought of adaption is absolutely key. The other thing I think is really important as a mindset is, as you're experimenting and trying things, and as Keith said, as you're noticing these things, let's think about how they might be relevant to me. And also, one point that I'll come back to almost from one of Tim Galway's great points from his book about the inner game and the inner game of tennis, and that thought of removing judgment, and in the sense of, let's just see these things as experiences that we can learn from and break down and reflect on, do our journaling on. But actually, let's not sort of catastrophize and think, okay, you know, that didn't go well, therefore I'm no good at this in general. You know, try and keep things very practical and live in the present at the moment. Say, I did an experiment, or this is what I noticed. That's what I can learn from it. And now I move on. So, you know, I think there's a few things about mindset, but just staying with it and staying present and accepting what we can and can't control, but doing those little experiments, I would say.
And just to pick up a phrase there, it's almost learning, but it's also unlearning. It's accepting that some things won't work and forget them and move on.
Indeed.
Sorry, Keith, I interrupted you.
You're right, Clive. There are two points there. That thing about learning and unlearning and then relearning, coincidentally, I was writing a piece only yesterday about that particular issue. But the other part as well that I just find utterly fascinating about this, and Nigel, I want to come to one of the points that you made a moment ago, is that prior to this situation occurring in the history of humanity, you're absolutely right. There was a huge period of time in discussing the impact of disruption, although arguably digital disruption rather than anything else.
Indeed.
Very hot on the agenda. I think the interesting part about what's happened now is that if you were to speak to people, which I'm sure that you do, but you know, the people that I have conversations with now in the corporate arena, now they're actually living immersed in an experience of disruption.
Mm.
Now, the two are surprisingly different. The narrative that was describing the process of digital disruption, or disruption to the industry or work patterns, and the experience of living in an experience of disruption are not the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's been really interesting to notice the degree to which the information that people had thought were the barometers and the metrics of disruption aren't necessarily the same as the experience of disruption.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And Keith, one thing that I think we spoke about with Clive the other day as well that links into this, Clive, you asked for practical things they could do. You know, Keith, we talked about feedback loops, didn't we?
And absolutely.
And that absolutely. Whole sort of, okay, I try something, you know, I've talked about trying an experiment, taking risks, we've spoken about. That whole sort of how I can ask for feedback of actually, you know, I tried that. How did that work for you? You know, and again, in this slightly more connected way, we feel perhaps in a personal way with our clients at the moment, or those people, our teams, the way we're working with, having permission, I think, to experiment and then ask for feedback must be a good thing to do too.
Absolutely. And in addition to that, which I think is not a higher skill, but an adjunct skill, is the ability to develop internal feedback loops, which is related, I think, and to comes to the practical point, the practical activity of journaling is a phenomenally useful tool and skill in developing that ability to create internal. When I talk about internal, I mean in your own human system of the getting an experience, reflecting on it, making meaning, and deepening the learning. It's profound, the things that emerge from that.
Does it mean in this turbulent time that learning is about self-motivation and self-experiment more than perhaps we've seen it before, more than, you know, being guided by your manager, your L&D community, or whoever it may be?
I think that's absolutely right, Clive. And two words that I would use to, in a sense, to develop that point is the subtle differences between value and doing. Because I've always known, and we've known each other a long time, you can tell when people are in pursuit of learning and when people are simply recipients of learning. There is a big difference, and it goes to the word that you mentioned, which is the motivation to do so. The reason why I want to bring that in is because in order for individuals to be motivated for continuous learning, there has to be some perception of value in this process and meaning in this process for people to do anything. Mm-hmm. And so that profound relationship between both the perception of value in learning and the experience of learning need to come together.
Keith, that takes me to the thought, because I completely agree about the intrinsic motivation, and Clive, as you said, you know, where does it come from? Should it be you rather than the L&D, function? I think that takes you to a really interesting thought of leadership style and actually giving permission and creating an environment or pushing back the almost the boundaries for your team members and being that protective umbrella around so they can actually have a playground to try things in as well. And so they always take away as a message from your, I don't know, from your one-to-one catch-ups with them, for example, of saying, you know, well, what did you try? You know, the leader, you know, the manager is asking, well, what did you try last month? What did you learn? What was interesting? You know, so it's about, as you say, what they've actually done themselves. It's not necessarily about, well, I went on a course. It might be they went on a course, But it takes us to that 70-20-10 thing, doesn't it? Of, yeah. You know, what should your learning portfolio be made up of? And as you say, Keith, absolutely the journaling, the self-reflection, the learning from things that you've done yourself, mixed in with some stimuli from the environment, going back to where we said, Keith, about keeping your antennae out and looking broadly.
Absolutely.
Mixed with perhaps the YouTube and the content stuff that you get as well. So for me, it's always that blend. But you're absolutely right, Keith and Clive. It's that thought of, are you hungry for it? Do you actually, you can tell, as you say, the people who are actually really hungry and actually the ones that look for things and are really curious and say, well, we tried this with a client last month and actually didn't quite work. But do you know what? I was talking to the client. They were talking about this and it made me think, da-da-da-da-da.
It's absolutely right. This is a profound opportunity in the field of learning. And I think it's right that, you know, many people would view this in the learning industry as a massive disruption, which of course it is. But the interesting thing about it is that these other opportunities for exploring the dimensions of learning and how, going back to building the feedback loops, but the inquiry and the pursuit of knowledge that is directly applicable to enhancing people's experience of what they do is there for all to see if they just care to pick it up.
Yeah, exactly. It's noticing, isn't it? That's the point. It's noticing and being curious about what you notice as well.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, we're headed towards the end of the podcast now. I'm going to ask you just for one or two key thoughts from both of you about what people should be doing to continuously learn in turbulent times. Keith, do you want to kick us off?
Yes, I will. The first thing I will say is make decisions that chunk down, in other words, that focus down on particular things that not are only of interest to you, but things that spark your curiosity. It's very easy to become overwhelmed with the sheer volume of information that is out there. Chunk it down. Make sure that the stuff that you identify is relevant initially, but then notice what you're curious about and follow those leads, wherever they may lead.
And that curious hunger.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Nigel.
And just to build on that and build on many of the things we've said with Keith, really, Clive, I would say I'll go back to that thing of having the courage to try things. That's one thing I would definitely say, an experiment, because it is an absolutely okay time to experiment. You know, the way we're recording this podcast, again, an interesting way to experiment, the way we're doing this through a new system that I haven't done with you before. So have the courage to experiment. And I suppose that links me to a second point of almost, whether it's the humility or whatever it is, but the humility to be a learner is the best way, I think, to approach the fact of, you know, we can wear many hats in our roles. We can wear a leader hat, which we have to wear at sometimes in certain situations, but never lose the hunger or the interest of actually wanting to put on the hat that says, I'm the learner actually at this time. And, you know, we could have a debate that perhaps we need to wear that hat always actually, and to be curious and to notice things. So experiment and try things and wear that learner hat.
And I guess don't get wrapped up in the emotion and the situation and the reality of what goes on around us at the moment, and reflect and just say, this isn't, as you both said, an opportunity to learn, to experiment, to take a moment or two to reflect and think what you've done differently and how that can serve you in the future.
And as Keith said, you know, and what does it tell us, Clive, as well? You know, so that's a really interesting situation I've just been in. What does that tell me? What do I take away from that?
Yeah.
We'll all come out of this feeling a lot better and a lot richer, I suspect.
Indeed.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Thank you both for that. I hope that's been of use to those listening to us. And as we said, that hunger, that thirst for knowledge shouldn't go away. And don't forget, in times like this, it's actually a greater value, perhaps. So thank you both for your thoughts. And we hope those listening actually have found this very useful and will join us again next time. So thank you and goodbye.